One of the first jobs I ever had was selling clothes in a department store. The store was called Fields, and it wasn't a chain of department stores. It was just a solitary department store in Jackson Heights, New York, which is in Queens. And I had never had a job before where someone actually gave me a paycheck for doing something. What an absurd concept that was. So I was enthralled by this. And I got this job because my stepmother, my wicked stepmother, knew somebody who worked in the department store and got me this job and said, look, my stepson, it's his first job. Can you just get him something in the department? So they got me this job, and I worked in the men's department, and it was pretty cool, actually. It did really, really well. Half the time, I would just go around to all the racks and all the displays and make sure everything was folded properly. I'd be refolding a lot of clothes because customers rifle through the clothes when they're looking at stuff, you know. And I was like in the pants department. And every once in a while, a customer would come in and say, I'd like to try on these pants. Is there a place I can try them? I say, yeah, the fitting rooms are, you go down that aisle and you take a left and that's where the men's fitting rooms are. And I can try on the pants. Yeah, you can try on the pants and come out and let me know how they look. And they would go into the fitting room. He was like a disgusting man. He was, you could tell he just had come off of a job site somewhere in construction. He was sweating and greasy, and he had an odor to him that was undescribable. It was like he was dunked in a fish tank and all the fish were dead and the carcasses were going up his skin. It was just, he smelled horrible. Just horrible. But he's a customer. And so I gave him the pants. He goes back, tries the pants on, comes out, and he looks horrible in the pants. He looks horrible in anything. Unless it's fish carcass, he looks horrible in them. And he looked in the mirror and he said, nah, I don't think so. And I said, okay. And he goes back into the fitting room, takes the pants off, and comes out and hands me the pants and says, well, have a nice day. I said, you have a nice day too, sir. And here I am standing there with these pants. And I smell the pants smell like fish. But it's not my job to question things. So I folded up the pants and I put them back on the rack. And then I was thinking to myself, wow, I've just discovered something about the clothing industry that I never knew before. When I'm trying on clothes in a store, somebody else may have tried these clothes on too and may have had scabies or some type of little skin disease or smelled like fish. I'm sticking my crotch and my legs inside something that, so you think that all the pants are brand new, just came out of the manufacturer or something, it came off the truck. No, some smelly guy probably tried them on. That was the revelation to me. And then a couple of years ago, I was doing a radio remote. I don't think I should say this publicly, but I'm going to do it anyway. And it was at one of those Salvation Army type places. And these are clothes that people have worn before in many different circumstances, if you know what I mean. These are donated clothes. What a wonderful thought. I don't need these pants anymore. Let somebody else wear these pants and enjoy their lives inside my pants. These are my pants, and I'm giving these pants to you. My crotch has enjoyed decades in these pants. Now your crotch is to enjoy the decades in these pants as well. I bequeath these pants unto you. And you see these people in this used clothing store, and they're taking clothes that other people wore, including pants and things like that. And then I interviewed the person that was running this used clothing store. We'll call it a used clothing store. And I said, well, this is a wonderful thing for people who don't have much money. You can get a pair of pants for a dollar, whatever the case may be. Nice and clean and fresh, just as if it was off the rack. And the person I was interviewing from the store said, uh-huh. And then we went to a commercial break, and the person said, well, you know, you talked about the clothes being nice and clean. I said, yeah, when the clothes come in, when they're donated, aren't they, like, washed and laundered or at least washed or something before they go in the rack? And the person says, no, these, when they're donated, they just go, they're tagged and they go right on the rack. I said, what? You mean all these clothes here are like dirty? And the person I was interviewing at the store said, no, well, you're supposed to wash the clothes before you donate them. And I said, do people know this? Do people know that you're supposed to wash these clothes before you donate them? Do you think people really care? They said, well, we don't wash the clothes. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. These things could have been left in a pile near a dumpster. And now I'm just taking them and putting them on my body? Well, we don't really discuss this part of it. Now, I could be wrong, but that's what I was told. I guess when you buy something from a used clothing store, it's your responsibility to go home and wash the clothes before you put them on your body. But I don't think a lot of people do that. I got a hunch there isn't a lot of washing going on either side of this transaction. I'm just saying. Do I have enough time to do a show?
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you so much for your time and your effort. Thanks for being here. You make yourself comfortable. Here, I have a pair of pants I'd like you to try on, or a pair of plants. Pants, plants, what's the difference? What's the letter L between friends, huh? Come on, stop being so picky. Oh, man, am I tired. How about you? Okay. I have two interesting guests on the program today. We're going to talk about car manufacturing. You might think that foreign cars are made from foreign places. No, now foreign cars, quote unquote, are being made in the United States, and it benefits United States workers. Really, Ron? I didn't know that. Well, stop arguing with me and shut up for 2 minutes, and you'll know this. God! We're also going to talk to an interesting gentleman who it's a company that apparently helps people stay up with technology, keep up with it. And we did this interview yesterday, this particular one, and I didn't quite agree with... all right, okay. here's the deal. I mean, this guy is saying how wonderful it is that we have artificial intelligence. I said, you don't know my friends. You're right. They are the artificial intelligence. Apparently, we have these things like the Amazon Alexa and this Google Talk thing where computers can actually talk to us, and we don't know it's computers. We think it's people because they have intonations now. I mean, these robocalls used to sound like robots. Now they sound like human beings, and you don't know if you're talking to an artificial intelligence robo or whether it's a real person. You can't tell the difference anymore, and that's bothering me. Now I'm thinking of all the people I had sex with in the past year. Were they real people or were they robots? Like I care. Either way, it wasn't a bad deal. I'm a little miffed because I might be a little older than you are, perhaps a bit younger. But I was brought up in a time that didn't have all this crap, where if you needed something, you went to another human being and it was their job on their paycheck to service you. Now I'm being serviced by robots a lot, especially on the telephone and probably on the computer thing. And I don't like it. I think that a lot of jobs have been taken by these artificial intelligent robots, and I don't like it at all. I feel demeaned and stupid talking to a machine and having a conversation with it and getting frustrated with someone that isn't a person. It's very, very odd. It's like having sex with a blow-up doll. I think that puts it very accurately. It's like having sex with a blow-up doll. And it makes me feel weird. And I don't like it. I was brought up in a time where the Google people were telephone operators. I don't know if you remember this or if you're old enough even to know this. I mean, I've forgotten pretty much because I can't remember much of anything anymore anyway. But I do remember this. If you had a question about something, you would dial 0 on your phone. And I said dial, didn't I? You would stick your finger in a dial, and it would make the sound of sh. And that 0 was all the way like around the dial. It took a long time for that dial to come back. But when you dialed 0, a person was on the other side of the phone. A real person. A living, breathing person that had a heartbeat and a brain. And you could have conversation with this person. How are you today? Fine. How are you? I have a question for you. Sure. How may I help you? Interaction with a person. Oh my God. And they were very friendly and very respectful because they had a job to do. And that's the job. And people were respectful to them accordingly. It was a nice relationship that I had with the operator. He or she would answer questions for me. If I dialed 411, I would get an information operator. It'd say, information, how may I help you? Yes, I'd like the number for Johnny Morse, lives on Blueberry Lane. I think it's Blueberry Hill, I'm not sure which. In Schenectady, New York. Yes, hold on please. That number is 516-555-7273. Thank you, information person. You're very welcome. Have a wonderful day. Thank you. You too, information person, who gives me information when requested for free. You're very welcome, sir. You're very polite and a wonderful person. Thank you. You are too. That was interaction with people who were paid to do a service, and they did it. I miss that so much. I don't talk to people anymore. There's basically no phone number that I can dial. Where on the other end, representing a company would be a person. Instead, it would be some type of artificial intelligence recording or robot. And the robot gets very, 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 very proud of its abilities, even though it's a robot. Hello, my name is John. We're giving names to these robots, man. Hi, my name is John. How may I help you? I can understand what you're saying. In a brief sentence, tell me what you'd like me to do. Tell me how I can help you. You're not even a person and you're talking to me in a conversation. This is screwed up. This is screwed up. Where's my robot? I want my robot to speak to your robot. You guys figure it out. I'm out of here. I'm going to the bathroom. You guys figure it out, you two robots. Well, I'm gonna see you later. I'm mad about that. I think we've lost a gigantic piece of society that had worked for decades previous. Now I'm totally disconnected from it. I'm talking to robots. And I don't even know it. I can't even tell the difference. Now the robocalls, they're coming through all the time on my cell phone, on my landline phone. Ron, you have a landline phone? Yeah, okay, I'm archaic, okay? At least it's not mounted on the wall. But yeah, I have one. And I get calls all day long. Hi, this is Cindy. I'm having a little trouble with my headphones. Can you hear me? Yes, Cindy, I can. I'm talking. I respond to a robot. I didn't know it was a. I thought it was a girl. I thought it was a woman. I'm demeaned by that, and you should be too. You should be upset with this. I know millennials are saying, "What's your problem? Isn't this the way it always was?" No, it wasn't. I hate to break the bubble, but no, it wasn't always like that. There was a time where there were people who did things. Don't you ever tell me that jobs are being taken away from us by other countries. Jobs taken away from Americans. You've taken your own jobs away from yourselves. You've killed entire industries employing hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. You've taken their jobs away. Because you don't need them anymore, because you've replaced them with machines, with artificial intelligence, with computers that can take orders instead of people taking orders over the phone. You've replaced them yourself. People didn't take these jobs away. You killed the jobs yourself on purpose to save money. And you think they're more efficient. They're not. They're more insulting. All right, that's enough.
The Ron Van Dam Show is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, so that's what ironic means.
Yes, honey. Yes, it does.
So I did this interview yesterday with this gentleman called Michael Blitz. That's his name. I think he was a person. It could have been a robot. And I was very nice to him. I was very nice and proper. I said, ooh, that's amazing that robots are doing all these things. Isn't it amazing in this world of technology? But in my heart, I was saying to myself, you bastard, man. You bastard. And I think it even creeped in at a little bit of the interview where I expressed my displeasure. I have to be nice to these people. And these are nice people. Don't get me wrong. This is their business, is to promote artificial intelligence and develop technology along those lines. So I was polite about it, but it does bother me. All right, here's the interview. Hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ron?
I'm great. Michael Biltz joins us. He's managing director with Accenture Vision. They do technology, research and development, all the kind of stuff that I don't know how to do. So tell me what's going on. Yeah, what is technology for people?
So I think technology for people is a part of the new trend that we're seeing, you know, happen in the marketplace right now. So when you look at the maturation of artificial intelligence, analytics, and other technologies, we're beginning to see a shift away from people having to adapt themselves to changing technology, and rather we're seeing the technology itself is starting to adapt to people.
Yes, very much so. Especially with the telemarketing robocalls, I can't tell the difference between a real person and the robos anymore.
No, and that's exactly right. Is that you start looking at what's happening, and it starts with real simple things like an application we all use today, Spotify, is the instead of a music application that's just a simple library to hundreds of millions of songs, what you really end up with is an application that is becoming a artificial intelligent DJ that's creating your playlist, introducing you to new music, and understanding exactly what you want to do and customizing the experience so you don't have to learn to be your own DJ.
Yeah. All right. Are we taking the human function out of things now? I mean, I guess humans can't kind of create playlists for you and answer any question you may have when you talk into a device. I guess it's a new technology that humans weren't able to provide personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think what the way that I'd look at it is it's not that you're pulling humans out of the mix here. Essentially, what you're doing is you're empowering people to do things that they've often never been able to do before.
Yeah,
you know, so if you look at it beyond the I'm using it for music, is that suddenly interacting with technology is becoming easier, allowing me to do more. It's giving me more control over my work. It's giving me more control over my life. You know, let me give you an example. Have you ever had a parking ticket that you didn't feel like you should have gotten?
Yeah, like all of them. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're like most people, there's nothing you really feel like you can do. You're not a lawyer. You don't understand how the government system works.
True.
You know, and so most people just pay it.
Right.
There's actually a artificial intelligent robo-lawyer called Do Not Pay that has successfully contested 200,000 parking tickets in New York, Seattle, and London. And it does it by creating a real simple interface online that people can type in. It'll ask you simple questions, what happened, what's going on, and it'll actually help you contest that parking ticket.
Can it help me get out of jury duty?
I think for that one, you're legally obligated.
Ah, damn. I thought I was legally obligated with the parking ticket, too, but okay, fine. No, there's no question. I've never met a human being where I can ask them any question at all, and they respond within 2 seconds with the answer. There are no human beings like that. At least I've never met them. So that is a service that I could never have expected before, I guess.
Yeah, no, and I think that's right. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, do worry that, you know, we're pulling people out of this, you know, but I think that, you know, they're way overestimating what things like artificial intelligence can do. Is the, you know, yeah, they're smart and they can really do specific things, but they're not taking over for people. Rather, what we're doing is we're finding that they're enhancing people. You know, you look at something that's a little farther out in the future that says, you know, something like, you know, IBM and Watson, is that they're actually working on taking an AI that's going to help diagnose patients. And yes, you can look at it that says, well, maybe this becomes, you know, a threat to, you know, doctors, you know, but what's really going to happen is you're suddenly going to expand the number of people and the amount of health care that you can provide. Is it suddenly every, you know, rural area in the U.S. or underserved area, you know, in urban markets, you now have nurses that can provide additional health care. You can provide orderlies who have, you know, the ability to do things that nurses used to be able to do. And if you take that and you really expand it, you suddenly realize that, you know, in places like Africa and rural Asia, is that you now have millions upon millions of people that you can now provide a new service, and then you have lots of people who are going to need to be creating jobs in order to be able to provide those services now that you can do these new things.
Okay. So now tell me about your company and what Tech Vision is doing, what roads you're taking here.
Yeah, so Accenture is a huge consulting company. We've got about 400,000 people, you know, and we work in every industry you can think of, you know, in essentially, I think, over, 120 different countries.
Wow.
And what we provide is that technical know-how to get from how you build your companies today to understanding how you use technology to really drive yourself in the future. We use the vision as that first step to understand what are the things that are coming down the road 3 to 5 years that companies need to care about in order to be able to change and adapt themselves, you know, before they get disrupted by somebody else.
It's interesting because whether you're starting a company or your company's been around for 5-6 decades, no company is what it was 5-6 decades ago. Every company has had to reinvent themselves and keep up with the technology thereof. There's really no company that exists without the advice of technology and the usage thereof.
No, that's right. It's the everybody's got to keep moving and keep changing, and that change is the new normal, you know. And
yes,
you know, and the reality is it's not just companies, you know, it's people too. You know, this idea of re-careering that says I'm going to have to refresh my skills because what I need to do for my job has changed, is that's becoming a reality too.
Wow. Okay. There's a lot there. There's a lot there. Okay. Where do people get more information?
Yep. You can either Google Accenture Technology Vision, or you can go to www.accenture.com/technology-vision.
Okay. Let me spell that for people here. Accenture, Accenture. And that's whether you have a business or maybe you're even a person or someone who's trying to start a business. This is a component that is absolutely necessary. It's without that ingredient of technology, you're behind. And that's just the way it is.
Exactly. You don't have to be fully ahead. You just have to be faster than the guy next to you.
Well, it's almost fully ahead at this point. That's because that's the speed they're going at. So you got to go faster. All right. Or do it better. Michael, thanks so much for the information today.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Hey, did you know that I do this every single weekday? I have for 25 years. What the hell's wrong with me? Yeah, we did broadcast radio for about 25 years, and then I went into this podcasting thing and actually increased our audience by going national and staying regional as well. And it's just been a nice little marriage here. We've been doing this for about 3 years, about 800 programs. Pretty cool. I hope that you join me every single weekday. You can find me all over the place. We're on the Podbean Network, we're on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, even on your Alexa app. We're all over the place. Actually, if you lift the lid on your toilet bowl, I'm probably in there as well. And if you've listened to a lot of these shows, that also describes the content. Eee, lordy, lordy, lordy. Tell you about some of the people that helped put this show together. We have a few producers, sure. We also have John Shanahan, who does our introductions and our little bump. They're called bumps, you know, little things that go on, you know, you're listening to, that kind of thing. And some of our comedy commercials. He's a great person, a great writer, great performer. Also, Jason Shaw. You're listening to his music right now. Jason Shaw, thank you so much for letting us use most of your music here on this program. Thank you. And Nicolette is the woman that you hear at the beginning of the program. And then we have Julie, who also does some announcing for us. You put them all together and you don't really need me, do you? before we continue and speak to our next guest, John Bozzella, he's going to talk about the auto industry. And you may be surprised that a lot of cars that you consider to be foreign manufacturers are made right here in the United States. It's been a big turnaround. And that'll be interesting. But before we do that, I know a lot of you can't live without knowing what's going to happen to you in your horoscope. So, here we go.
Greetings, fellow planet travelers. Kip Starchild here with your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. Let's see what the stars have in store for you. Aquarius, if your life seems like it's going nowhere this month, take heart in knowing that you are absolutely correct. That counts for something. Pisces, they say it's very rare for people to get attacked by wild bears in the city, but you are about to prove them wrong. Aries, this month your lucky number is 3, if you know what I mean. Taurus, you know that list of hopes and dreams you've secretly been keeping? Might want to change the title to Bucket List and get going on it. Gemini, the delivery boy is going to add a little something extra to the next pizza you order. Perhaps it's time to reconsider the whole no tipping the delivery boy thing? Cancer, don't put off your big plans just because it looks like someone else beat you to it. There's definitely room for 2 transgendered Caitlins in the world. Leo, a mysterious stranger will approach you with an intriguing proposition soon. The stars are a little unclear, so it's 50-50 that it might be a mugging. Virgo, put the sadness of the past behind you and get back out there in the world. This time, though, put on some pants first, and you're still not allowed near schools. Libra, pursue your dreams no matter what other people say. If you ask me, the world could probably use more whale gynecologists. Scorpio, not looking like a great month for you. The job situation is iffy, the romance will probably come to an end, finances are rocky, but look on the bright side. When and if it eventually shows up. Good luck. Sagittarius, a little more fiber in the diet wouldn't hurt, Capricorn, nobody likes Mondays, of course, but for you, this Tuesday is like, wow, the stars are like cringing and talking about how to express their condolences. I'd say stay inside, but probably not going to make a difference. I'm Kip Starchild, and that's your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape for the month. Until next time, peace.
Hello, Ron.
John, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. And you?
Great. This is John Bozzella. He is a veteran auto industry executive, president and CEO of Global Automakers since 2014. And a long history of knowing automakers in the auto industry, suffice to say, that's the situation. So, John, and we're talking about automobiles and the car industry in the United States. I'm very confused because it seems like I hear the top automakers are foreign cars, which means, you know, they've got Toyota and all that kind of stuff. And yet the auto industry in America is building. I'm confused about how those two play a role.
Yeah, so Ron, it's not your grandfather's car industry.
No.
You know, today more than, 13 car companies are building cars in the United States. And so what you see is a very vibrant, competitive auto industry in the United States. And what that means is the customer wins. There's more choice than there's ever been. Cars are safer than they've ever been. Consumers get the benefits of that. So that's what the industry looks like today. I think what confuses people is that notions of what is an American car have really changed. You know, if you look at government statistics that track domestic content, you know, the most American car is the Toyota Camry made in Georgetown, Kentucky. That's got a lot of American content. It's made by Americans. The supply chain that supports the production of that vehicle is American. So, you know, it's a very different industry than it used to be, Ron.
Okay. So there, I guess there was a time at first when the cars were imported in full from other countries as full cars, and that's when we started talking about this, but now they're assembled and many of the parts are American-made.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. If you go back 50 years, and you know, I'm old enough, unfortunately, to remember back, way back in the old days, you know, what you saw was, you know, car companies from outside the United States coming in as importers and, you know, starting with small volumes of import vehicles. And what happened over time is they listened to the customer, they built vehicles the customer customers desired, and they really made a decision to be in it for the long haul, to build where they sell, and that's why you see this very robust industry that you see today with 13 car companies producing here.
Good, good. Well, that's good news, because probably most people don't understand that. They think Toyota is a foreign make, and I remember commercials when I was growing up for Chevrolet, that was like, buy American, buy Chevrolet, everything's made here, even the parts are made in my basement. That seemed like that. But so it's all changed now. Hey, yeah, go on.
No, I'm sorry, Ron. Yes, it has changed. If you think about it, half of the vehicles produced in the United States today are produced by international car companies employing Americans in 14 separate states, right? So, you know, you're exactly right about that.
All right, fine. All right, that's good. All right, so let's say I wanted to buy a car. First of all, why are cars so expensive now? My first home costs less than a car that I would buy now. How does that work?
Yeah, so, well, the cost of homes has also gone up.
Well, I know.
Right, Ron?
I left that part out. I left that part out.
Right. But let's talk about that. Cars are really technological marvels. Mm-hmm. You know, when I started in the industry, they were mechanical devices.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe there was a transistor in there, you know, some technology to support an AM or an AM-FM radio. But today, cars are rolling computers.
So
what's happened is, cars are safer than they've ever been. They're more technologically advanced than they've ever been. And the good news about that is it produces great benefits for customers, right? So we can save lives, and we can save time, and we can save fuel with this technology. And so you're seeing a lot of investment by the car companies in technologies designed to do those things for customers.
You know, it's funny. When I was growing up, I remember my father driving us down the road, and on the highway there would be like no less than 20 cars on the side of the road overheating or tires going down. It was always cars on the side of the road. Breakdown leg was always full. Now it's very rare that you see any kind of breakdown whatsoever, unless it's been an accident. Cars are just like, they don't break down anymore.
That's exactly right. And it's remarkable when you think again about how much computing power and how much technology you know, is in those cars. They need to be reliable. They shouldn't break. They can't break. Customers depend on getting from point A to point B. And that's what the industry looks like today.
All right. Okay. All right. So let's say I want to buy a car right now. Is this a good time? What's the best time to buy a car?
You know, now is a very, very good time to buy a car. What you're seeing is a lot of competition in the marketplace. You know, we've got a very, very wide open market here in the United States, as you know. So, you know, car companies, as we discussed, all from all around the world compete here, and the customer wins. So, you know, what you're seeing is lots of competition. You know, the industry's been on a roll. We've been, frankly, on a remarkable, perhaps historic, trend of higher sales. You know, going back to, you know, the dark days of 2009, where, you know, I think the industry was probably at about 10 million cars and light trucks sold in the United States.
Yeah.
We're, you know, in that 17 million range now. So I think it's a really, really good time. The other reason it's a great time to buy a car or truck is it's a golden age of innovation.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, we're creating crash avoidance technologies now, not just how to survive a crash, but, you know, advanced and automatic emergency braking, lane keep assist, adaptive cruise control, all of these safety features, I think make it a really, really good time to buy cars.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. although there were nothing like the days when they had like American workers actually pounding steel and putting the cars together. And as soon as the robotics came along, yeah, you can make more cars, but that's where we started losing some. It wasn't necessarily overseas. It was automation that kind of took the human factor out of a paycheck, I think.
Automation has certainly improved the industry. It's improved quality. But let's keep in mind, Ron, 7 million Americans directly and indirectly depend on the auto industry for their employment. Mm-hmm. So it's to this day a remarkable economic engine that produces opportunity all around the country. And just on the international side, or if you think about just international automakers, they employ directly 130,000 people. When you consider their suppliers and their dealers, that's another, 1.3 million Americans employed by just the international side of the industry. So, it continues to be a great opportunity for employment and for investment in communities around the country.
Yeah. It's an international economy. There's no way around that. And I wish the president would understand that, but it is an international economy. We do benefit from it greatly. Okay, you don't have to say anything if you don't want.
Well, I will say this though to support your point. When you think about it, 95% of the world's customers are outside our borders.
Yes.
And 80% of the world's purchasing power is outside our borders. So it's really important that we're able to export vehicles.
Yes.
We export 2 million vehicles a year, 2 million cars and light trucks a year from plants all around the country. So yeah, it's important that we think about markets not only within the United States, but we look for opportunity to continue to support employment by exporting vehicles around the world.
And that includes building economic alliance with countries as opposed to isolating. Thank you so much for letting me say that. Okay, John, how do I get more information about this subject?
It's a great question. So go to hearforamerica.com. And you'll see lots of great data as well as information about the investment of international automakers around the country. You can also go to globalautomakers.org to learn more about the industry. And Ron, it's been really a pleasure to be with you.
John, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Wow. Well, interesting stuff. I learned so much on this show. I'm like you are. I don't know this stuff until I hear it myself. That's amazing what we learn here, isn't it? What a wonderful, wonderful program this is. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back with you again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.